Get Published, Episode 16, for Saturday, October 24th, 2009. Hi there, and welcome to Get Published. I'm your host, Mike Plested. You're probably wondering why Episode 16 is in the feed so quickly. After all, Get Published is bi-weekly, and it's only been a week since the last episode. Well, J.C. Hutchins' book, Seventh Son Descent, is hitting the bookshelves on Tuesday, October 27th, and I really couldn't pass up the opportunity to talk to him again. As such, this is going to be a special episode. There won't be a comment section, just a discussion between JC and I, and I really hope that you'll find that discussion worthwhile. Enjoy this special episode, and be sure to check out JC's site when you have a chance. I hope you enjoy the show.
Gilroy 2.0 is here. Gilroy 2.0 is everywhere. Gilroy 2.0 will be everywhere. And John, and Dr. Mike, and Father Thomas, and the psychopathic John Alpha, as the most popular podcast novel series in history, gets a reboot. Seventh Son Descent is in print now. The beta clones are back with new scenes, new set pieces for the print novel. The President of the United States is dead, murdered by a four-year-old boy, and it's up to John and the other beta clones to hunt the man behind the assassination, John Alpha. To celebrate Seventh Son Descent's bookstore debut, author J.C. Hutchins, that's me, is releasing more clone-killing content at his website and beyond. An entirely new serialized podcast recording of Seventh Son Descent's print edition manuscript, serialized PDFs of the book, free music by John Smith, Seventh Son, 7 Days, a prequel anthology, and the full text of the novel, serialized at boingboing.net, all available now. Support the print debut of Seventh Son Descent. Learn more and download the free audiobook and other content at jchutchins.net and at podiobooks.com.
Danger. Incoming interview. And it's now time for the interview with J.C. Hutchins. I had originally expected this to be a pure pimping session for J.C., but as you will hear, we talked about a lot of different things. And for me, talking about the craft of writing is really pure bliss. And I think you will find this discussion is full of bliss. So without further ado, I present J.C. Hutchins.
Well, you know, if in a perfect world, I'd be hitting the sack before midnight. But I haven't done that in damn near 4 years. So. In fact, I've been working off of about around 4 hours of sleep for at least the past 2 months. So I'm going to be up till at least 2, maybe even 3. So don't worry. This is fine. I mean, it's like this is peak working hour.
Oh, boy. You're scaring me a little bit. I mean, if that's what success means, I'm going to have to start, you know, getting the coffee stocks stored away now.
Yeah, I don't know if staying up till 2 a.m. Every night for 2 months or whatever is you know a key to guaranteed success. It's just how I'm wired. You know, and my kind of thought is that you know, I started writing this book almost to the day 7 years ago, and it's, you know, 7 years one shot. You know, it's like, so swing for the bleachers, try to make it a grand slam.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand what you're saying. My book took me 7 years to write, not, 4 years to write and then podcast and then keep working towards the final goal. But I'm still working on it and it's going to get there.
Hey, man, I'm thrilled. At least you're doing it. And that's something, you know, there's a lot of folks that will kind of say, well, wow, I mean, you beat the odds by getting in print. And my reply is nearly always, bitch, what are you talking about? I defy the odds because I actually started.
That's such a good point. And, you know, it makes me think about NaNoWriMo that's coming up and how important it is just to to dedicate yourself to something.
Absolutely.
And you know, and the key words to getting published, I think there's two of them. Persistence is probably the big one. Intestinal fortitude is a phrase that probably fits in there too.
Right. And yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say the second word is for some reason escaping me right now.
Well, while you ponder that, I mean, it was actually the upcoming NaNoWriMo event of 2002 that got me writing Seventh Son.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was like, I can do that. I can play. I can try that. And of course, you know, I certainly didn't quote win. You know, I didn't generate 50,000 words in 30 days. But just the existence of NaNoWriMo really was the thing that pushed me over the edge and the final catalyst I needed to start writing.
Yeah. And sometimes we all need that catalyst too. I wrote a lot when I was young. And when I went to college, I kind of stepped away from it. But you kind of get into a place where writing just comes back to you and you have to do it. And that's mm-hmm. where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
And that 7 years, I finished my book. Literally, it was the 27th of October.
I'll be darned.
And I was being told, get going for NaNoWriMo. And I'm thinking, okay, yeah, 100,000 words took me 7 years. Are you insane?
Right.
Three weeks later, I had another 50K down. My first YA book. I had it done in 3 weeks.
Well, hot damn, Mike. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it was and it was the most fun I ever had writing. Most fun I had alone.
Right. Well, I tell you, it you know, that what any kind of novelist who tries to grind out particularly daily content, and NaNoWriMo forces you to do that if you want to kind of make it happen, is the rhythm and the momentum that you get.
Oh, for sure.
And that, you know, and once that train really starts to chug, I mean, you're a damn fool if you want to put on the brakes and stop writing for a month. I mean, that's suicide.
Well, it absolutely is. I'm editing the 7 year book right now.
You know, and I tried this before I released Seventh Son in podcast form, was to do the traditional route and try to find an agent first.
Right. Yeah. And that sometimes works and more often doesn't.
I'm with you. Well, it's an ultra competitive space, and industry professionals have a certain perception of what sells and what doesn't. And sometimes, much like Seventh Son, the project doesn't easily fit into a sellable kind of category.
Right. Well, I was listening to Murr's last set of interviews that she did during Dragon Con, and one person mm-hmm. from Bane and one from Tor, and they were basically saying, you know, Bane can get away with selling science fiction now, even though sci-fi is kind of having a hard time in the recession, because they have a reputation for putting out good sci-fi.
Yeah, a certain kind of sci-fi at that.
Yeah, exactly.
Military sci-fi, you know, mostly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the editor was with Pyre. What was his name?
Yeah.
Lou Anders, or yeah, I think it's Lou Anders.
It was Pyre talking about Bane. Pyre and Tor.com. Yeah, that's right.
Right. It's so cool. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, think about this. 10 years ago, you and I wouldn't be able to have not only this literal conversation, like via the internet, but we're talking about we're talking about an interview that we both listen to that isn't on the radio. How cool is that?
Yeah, no kidding. That's exactly right. And I'm coming more to the opinion that getting published is not about luck at all. It's mm-hmm. about how badly do you want it mm-hmm. and how hard are you willing to work for it?
Right. I agree. Way back in 2002, I used to be a newspaper reporter, and I was, you know, pretty happy in my job, but I was noticing that the industry was probably going to collapse pretty soon, the online space, and these crazy things called online journals at the time.
Ah, yes.
Which became web logs, which became the de facto standard in which most of us receive our daily news these days, at least online savvy peeps. And I kind of, you know, it's, I'm not, you know, I wasn't Cassandra or anything, but I saw a trend, and I saw an industry-wide reluctance to embrace the trend. And so combine that with this kind of thunderbolt idea I kind of had in 2001, this idea popped in my head for this novel about human clones. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. But I was just kind of like, well, wait a minute. You know, this industry seems very, very troubled. I want to write this novel But when I come home from the day gig from this very troubled industry, I am absolutely wiped, creatively drained, you know.
Yes.
And so why not? Here's an opportunity to kind of get out of this business for two reasons. The first is to take on a job where I would, first off, job security.
Yeah.
You know, job security in another industry. But also more important was, well, maybe I can take a less stressful and creatively impacting gig at another business. And when I come home, I'll have the time and the juju to write this book about human clones. And so that's what I did. And I wrote the book Seventh Son from 2002 to 2004. And in 2005, I edited it and I began to shop it around to literary agents because that's what you do in the business. You can't even think about getting a publisher. You need your immediate brass ring as a novelist is nearly always to try to find an agent, your middleman, your advocate.
No, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say there. I remember I started looking in at the industry in terms of getting published probably 6 or 7 years ago. And at that time, there were very, very few publishers who would take an unsolicited, unagented manuscript.
I'm sure. And I'm nearly certain that number is probably even lower now than it was then. However, one of the things, because it sounds like you were kind of looking into the space around the same time I was, generally speaking. And back then, agents were not online. Agents were not, you know, internet savvy. They requested manuscripts and queries and whatnot nearly exclusively to be, you know, mailed to them. These days, I'm happy to say, and for you know, any of your listeners who are writers, you know, the space has changed dramatically in that a great many literary agencies will accept electronic submissions. So that's very promising because it saves time and money for an author. And if you're like me and you don't have two nickels to rub together, that really helps.
Oh yes,
right. But anyway, so I wrote this book and I tried to find an agent for it, and it was universally rejected. Now, there may be a couple of reasons for this. Seventh Son is like it's a present day science fiction story. It's kind of like a techno thriller in the vein of, let's say, Michael Crichton. And it combines, you know, a high tech storyline with action. And maybe that wasn't resonating with the agents that I pitched it to. But a far more rookie mistake that I made was that I wrote this novel until it was done. I wanted to tell a really big, big, big story. You know, I call it widescreen fiction.
Right.
I hope that doesn't sound too pretentious, but that's what I like to call it. You know, in fact, it's probably the opposite of pretentious, to be honest with you. And because I love highly accessible popular fiction, right? And the same goes for nearly all of the media that I ingest. And so I wanted to kind of emulate that. But I wound up writing a manuscript that was about, let's say, 1,300 pages long.
Yeah, that's pretty massive.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, and absolutely unsellable. You know, I mean, you'd have to be Stephen King twice to get a 1,300 page book in print.
Yeah, very, very true. I think the number I keep hearing is 100,000 is really the outside limit that a first time author wants to hit.
That's right. And that roughly translates to between 350 and 400 pages, something like that.
Yeah.
And I, in contrast, was submitting a 300,000 word manuscript for consideration for representation. So that was a huge mistake on my part. But I also made the rookie mistake of thinking that the industry would make an exception for my brilliance.
Yes. Well, you know, it doesn't hurt to have a lot of confidence in yourself, but...
Yeah. But at the same breath, you have to. And, I, of course, have since, you know, seen the wisdom of why the industry is the way it is in this regard and my folly back then. But, you know, interestingly, but what this did was is that this after receiving universal rejections, this kind of left me at a crossroads. And it wasn't a very pleasant one at first because I could put it in a drawer like every other unpublished novelist and let it sit there and rot. And then lick my wounds for years before starting a new book, right? And that's a perfectly acceptable and, you know, very traditional way to pursue things. But during 2005, I was also exposed to podcasting and was listening to podcasts practically that entire year from like maybe February, March of 2005. And this was completely revelatory because for once I was able to listen to content that spoke to me. you would never hear, at least in the market in which I live in South Florida, the highly competitive major metropolitan market, you would never hear a radio program about science fiction geeks talking about their favorite books.
Yeah, I think I've heard a couple of those on podcasts, yes.
Yeah, well, right. Well, you know, and that was the revelation was, my gosh, I can listen to this thing called Dragon Page Cover to Cover that, you know, recorded by a couple of guys in Arizona, and it feels like I'm right there, you know, and they're not only doing that, but they're speaking my language. Finally. And it was so liberating and very empowering for a lot of creators. And some of these creators included authors, such as the horror thriller writer Scott Sickler. And Scott Sickler was one of the very first guys who released his novel Earthcore, which was unpublished, as a serialized audiobook for free. And he got a lot of buzz, and other authors got a lot of buzz in the space during that year of 2005. And I saw, and again, trends, right? Anticipating trends. Yes. It's seeing emerging trends. I realized I can't, like, this book is dead. Seventh Son is dead. I can't sell it. But maybe I can share it like these guys. And my intent wasn't to get it published. My intent was just to get it out there, right? Because right. I was absolutely convinced that, you know, that while this book isn't the best thriller you'll ever read, and it's not Gone with the Wind, it was compelling. I was proud of it. And mm-hmm. I thought that it could, I wanted to see if I was right. And you know, and so in early 2006, I began releasing what became the trilogy of books. I chopped up this monster manuscript into thirds, the first act becoming book one, Descent, and started releasing that in 2006. And, you know, within a few months was, you know, had thousands of listeners. And that went on to become tens of thousands of listeners, which attracted the attention of a literary agent, which I acquired, which attracted the attention of St. Martin's Press. And we inked a deal. And now the book will be in print. So it was this crazy, circuitous kind of ass backwards way of getting the book in print. But I'm absolutely convinced that if I hadn't hit that wall in 2005, I never would have embraced the new media model, the giving it away is okay model, which means I never would have built what they call an author platform,
right?
And what normal people like you and me call awesome fans, right?
Yes.
That never would have happened. So when Seventh Son comes into print at the time of this recording, next Tuesday, October 27th, I am, you know, if you were to compare my book release, and I'm an unknown author, you know, in the mainstream, with another unknown author's release being released on the same day, who's going to sell more copies?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Who is going to sell more copies? The person who has been growing the fan base and interacting closely with their awesome fans, as you said, mm-hmm. and having them actually come to you with new material and ideas and all of the rest of their energy and fabulous ideas. I guess I'll use the word ideas again.
And goodwill. And, you know, I mean, this has been a years long investment of emotional energy for them. And they want to see me succeed. And yes, they do often bring a lot of great ideas to the table, too. Some of which I use, some of which are probably a little too complicated to use.
Right.
If only because I don't have the time or the money to or energy, mental bandwidth to manage a project, you know, these projects. But at every turn, I mean, you know, it's like when you compare nobody author J.C. Hutchins to nobody author X, and J.C. Hutchins has a thriving, you know, community of fans, does that mean that J.C. will hit the New York Times bestseller list? Absolutely not. But it means that J.C.'s people are far more likely to bring it than nobody author X, who has none of that at his disposal.
No, you're absolutely right. You're in an excellent position in that you already have a number of people not only looking forward to your book coming out, and I'm not talking, you know, friends and family, although fans are in a lot of cases, they become friends and almost family to you.
You're right.
But, you know, you've got these people actively going out and spreading the word. And I know you've got a street team, mm-hmm. and the street team has done an amazing job getting out there and spreading the word for you.
Yeah, they've been amazing. This, you know, one of the things that I realized as I was continuing to push forward with the Seventh Son podcast novel trilogy, especially in 2007, was that I was receiving. I found myself having a hard time scaling, and what I mean, and scaling meaning scaling to the demands that I was putting on myself to promote the work, right? And I remember this very vividly. I had Nathan Fillion, who fans of the television program Serenity, Firefly and the film Serenity, will know him as Captain Mal Reynolds from that property. He was going to make a guest appearance on my podcast to read a recap, you know, previously on Seventh Son.
Right.
And I really wanted to promote his appearance. And I remember spending an entire day, upwards of like maybe 16 hours, like researching and sending out press releases to websites that I thought would like this announcement. And at the end of the day, I looked up and I thought, this is too much for one guy. What if, you know, what I need, you know, I was like, I need an assistant. And I thought, how pretentious is that? And then I realized, wait a minute. I've got thousands of people who are absolutely invested in this book. Why don't I ask them for their help? It's a different kind of help. You know, they don't have access to the media, right?
Yeah.
But they have access to friends and family, and maybe they have Facebook accounts and blogs and Twitter accounts or whatever it may be, and can easily, you know, if you make it easy for them to spread the word, and if you can incentivize that evangelism with, you know, some memorable swag, why not go for it? And that's what I did. That's when I started the Seventh Son Ministry of Propaganda and started assigning, you know, street team like missions to my listeners. We recently resurrected the Ministry of Propaganda to celebrate Seventh Son's new release, and people are jumping right back on board. It's amazing.
No, you never underestimate the power of viral marketing, especially when people have got an emotional vested interest in what they're doing.
That's right. You know, nothing. And frankly, you know, one of the things that I've kind of discovered is that, you know, if you want something to go viral, if the word viral is in your mind when you like create a promotion, it'll never become viral.
No, very true.
But good old fashioned grassroots word of mouth. Right. Like that's the, you know, where you are. You know, it's, you know, I wasn't going to see the movie District 9 because I'm very, very busy.
Yes.
But because I've had my dearest friends tell me, you know, personally, you know, this movie is very worth, you know, is worthwhile and absolutely worth your time and money to see. I'm going to see it, you know, and that's viral in a way. But frankly, you know, it's more just a good old fashioned grassroots word of mouth. And that's kind of what I've been tapping into, often an online version of that with the Ministry of Propaganda.
Well, and quite honestly, who are you going to listen to? Are you going to listen to a critic you don't know who tells you something about a film or a book? Or are you going to listen to your friend or your brother or your father or, you know?
Right. Exactly. There is a level of influence that comes with that. And of course, you know, when, you know, if you hear your friend talk about, you know, the new X-Men movie, you're not doing the math and thinking this person has influence over me. And the person who's telling you about that isn't thinking I have influence over their decision. You know, it's nothing like that. It's just an associative compatibility that, that really resonates. You know, that's what friendship is. And so if your friend who has influence, whether either wittingly or unwittingly, recommends a great book to you and you're in like, oh, hell, I just finished reading my last book. I'm in the market for a new one. You know, why not? He says it's great. You know, there you go. Cha-ching.
Well, exactly. And I think that really, if you look at the social media aspect, the whole point of social media is relationships, whether it's a relationship between two people who have common interests or, you know, a writer with his or her audience. What you're doing is you are connecting with those people in a very intimate and meaningful way. And by doing that, you're not just a name on a book cover. You suddenly become a person, and as we've already said, you become a friend.
Right. And as close of a friend as this very peculiar way of communication, comparatively to the kind of communication that we've known for, you know, for thousands of years,
right.
This bizarre time shifted in your ears, in your car, during your commute kind of experience, which is in many ways similar to like a radio program, but there are opportunities to directly contact that content creator. And if you're like me and you have a, voicemail line, right, to call the content creator, and then the following week, hear your call in your car, and then hear the content creator compliment you or answer your question. I mean, it's just like it's not real time, but it's very, very close to it in some ways, and it creates this very kind of intimate bond. When you complement that with what I believe is a very intimate form of communication, which is oral or verbal storytelling, the audiobook. We all love to hear stories told to us, and in fact, I've told at least a dozen stories already during this interview. In one form or another, we love to hear stories, and I think that also creates a second breed of affection and an emotional connection to the content creator, where it's not just the persona that you grok, but you also grok the content that they create.
Very true. And the people who are listening, I mean, in the back of their mind, they understand that they chose to listen to you. It's not that they're listening because you're the next program on the radio. It's they know what to expect, or they have a good idea of what to expect. They've heard your stuff before, probably. In my case, my first episode, they wouldn't know what they were getting into. But they have come back, and it's conscious. It's not something that's being forced on them.
That's exactly right. And this is kind of analogous to what I see in social media in general, and an unfair criticism about social media is that, social media, and we'll put podcasting and my podcast fiction into that, is a completely 100% opt-in experience.
Right.
Where you define, like, you are empowered to seek out the most relevant and resonant channels for you as an individual, channels of, streams of entertainment wherever they may be. And hell, you're also empowered to create your own. I mean, how liberating is that? You are absolutely not held prisoner to what trends are on the top 40, this year versus last. It's, whatever. But one of the unfair criticisms I see about social media that is often leveled is, I don't want to read what you're doing. I don't want to read that you just cooked dinner on Twitter. That doesn't make sense, or I don't want to read your Facebook status and learn that you just that you had a romantic encounter last night.
Yeah, and I know people who have voiced that complaint to me that Twitter's a waste of time because it's all of the inane daily pieces of your life that are showing up. And certainly I don't go onto Twitter just to see what people are eating or, that the person sitting beside them on the bus hasn't showered in 3 days. However, that is part of the experience. You don't know, or you don't get to know people unless you get those daily pieces of triviality, not just what their big thoughts are, but you got to see what the small parts of their life is to see the complete picture of a person. So yeah, I agree.
Right. And to further that, me critiquing the criticism is that, well, if you don't want to read what someone is tweeting about what they had for supper, opt out.
Yes. Yeah. You don't have to read that part.
You can unfollow or unfollow them, or whatever it may be. And I think that there is this, and this it's most often leveled by people who are relatively new to the space, is that they feel somehow held hostage, by what is the inbound signal that they are receiving, or signals plural. And my reply has always been, because I'm, as a content creator, I've, I have had people who have reached reached out to me and said, you know what, I listened to the first, you know, episode of your book. It's not for me, but thank you for releasing it for free. Or, you know what, I know that you're releasing your audio for free, but I'm more of a text guy, so I can't, you know, I can't support you, but know that I, you know, but go, you know, go man, go. And my reply, you know, in my reply, if not, you know, via my typed reply, but my mental reply is often, you know what, that's, you know, thank you for trying it, or thank you for, you know, or giving it a shot, but you are in absolute control of the signal, the inbound signals that you receive. And when you contrast that, and when you kind of apply that again to Twitter and Facebook, you can always opt out. You can always walk away, because you're not, you know, and it's not like you spent any money to obtain the content in the first place.
No, that's very true.
So there was zero risk to sign up. And there are certainly there should not be any hard feelings on the side of the content creator when you opt out as well.
No, for sure. And that's really what makes it so gratifying to me when I learn that somebody is listening to what I'm putting together and actually enjoying it. Because you never know, that feedback is so hard to come by. People seem, you know, our lives are busy. We don't all have time to call in to, you know, Slice of Sci-Fi and say, you know, we love your show. I don't agree with what you said in the last episode, or absolutely agree, but you didn't take it far enough. People don't have time to do that. So how often do you miss out on that feedback just because people are enjoying it and they just assume that you know it?
Well, yeah. And I can speak from personal experience. And I mean, you know, is that I would like to think that for every complimentary email that I receive, that it represents, you know, a number of people who, you know, I mean, how can I put this? In my contract with, you know, I perceive my contract with the audience is this: I produce content and you ingest it, right? You know, and now as with the upcoming print release of Seventh Son, you know, I produce content and I really hope that you pay to ingest it to support future content from me. But that's where the contract ends. Anything beyond that, be it a tweet on Twitter, you know, directed at me, or a Facebook posting on my wall, or an email or a voicemail, is absolutely heroic, above and beyond the call of duty, you know, on the side of the audience member.
Agreed. Right? Agreed.
You know, and so, you know, we as content creators shouldn't expect, it's like, if you build it, they will come. That's bullshit. No, you have to actively solicit, you know, you have to actively promote your work. But then if you want feedback, actively solicit it. And also understand that, you know, not everyone's going to reply, and that's, you know, is going to, you know, rally to your call, to your request. And that's just, and that's, again, just fine. Be grateful with what you hear and learn what you can. But for me, you know, I often, you know, think to myself, well, for every one negative, like, you know, the people who don't like my work are rarely going to email me.
True.
The people who do like my work are more inclined to, but because of our busy schedules and the effort, even, you know, typing out a 10-sentence email, that requires effort. The creative effort that requires may not, you know, that takes a higher level of commitment from a fan. So, you know, for every one email that I receive that of people liking it, maybe there are 10, maybe it represents 10 people, 20. I mean, who knows? But at least there is inbound signal and inbound feedback, positive and negative.
Yes, you're absolutely right. We shouldn't, as content creators, think it's our due to get feedback at all.
No. And I think that this is a common mistake with content creators. It's a common mistake, and it's a mistake that I'm blessed to say that I don't think I made when I began to release Seventh Son, because I was hailing from a place where, well, first off, the podcast novel, you know, the space was very different, and it was a completely unproven, it was still an oddity, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. And also, this book was issued and proclaimed DOA by at least 60 publishing professionals, i.e. agents. So when I put it out there, you know, the last thing I actually expected was feedback, much less, you know, the level of success it changed. Also, I think it kind of hails from where you are, kind of maybe personally. I hail from, you know, we grew up poor. And when you grow up poor, you learn very quickly that the world doesn't owe you shit. and that if you want the world, you know, and if you want the world to pay attention to you, and if you want the world to reward you for your hard efforts, you've got to work 10 times harder than anyone else. And you can't expect, you shouldn't expect anything. You should work for it. And that sense of entitlement, or lack thereof, you know, kept me well grounded throughout all this stuff. I don't see myself as a celebrity. I don't see myself as a particularly, you know, talented writer. I'm just trying to get by, you know, and improve my craft and hopefully sell some books along the way. Right. Once they make a movie, well, maybe things will change. You know, then I'll light my cigars with flaming $100 bills. But until then, you know, it's like you got to stay hyena hungry. You always have to be on the prowl. You can't stop swimming. You're the shark. You can't stop swimming. You just got to keep moving.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, any time that I have made the mistake of thinking that something is owed to me, that seems to be the time when I get I'm the least happy for starters, and I get a swift kick in the ass, and I'm told, you know, I have to tell myself that it's time to back down and re-level myself.
Isn't that the truth? And that it has happened to me time and time again, myself, because, you know, I'd be lying if I told you that, you know, oh, JC is humble all the time. You know, I'm it's like, you know, I have my days where I'm like, man, I fucking nailed that. I'm a badass, right? And I'm also aware of the limited, you know, influence, you know, that I have, you know, the small sphere of influence that I have within the subcultures in which, you know, my content is often, you know, shared and distributed. But you know, when you look at, but again, it's like, you know what, you know, look at, if you want to be famous, look at George Clooney. You know, that's what famous is. And until you're there, you're not famous.
Well, and I guess it comes back to, are you looking to be famous? Are you looking to be rich? Or are you looking to be happy and make a living for yourself?
Right. And my goal has always been not to be, rich, but to simply, and not to be famous, but just to simply be able to be blessed enough to eke out a sustainable living writing fiction. That hasn't happened yet. You know, I mean, it's like, I've had two books published this year in 2009, a supernatural thriller and then Seventh Son Descent, which will be coming out soon. You know, don't think for a New York nanosecond that, you know, that there is a sustainable life in the advances that I receive for those books. They aren't, you know, contrast that with other authors, Scott Sigler being one of them, who was fortunate enough to receive, you know, advances for his work that permits him to have that lifestyle. You know, that is a personal and a professional goal of mine, is to not be wealthy. No, I don't want to drive a Porsche. I'm fine with my Corolla. I swear to God. I just want to be able to, you know, I just want to be able to do this all the time. And that would delight me. But now I know I have external validation from thousands of people that it would delight them too.
Yeah, no, you know what the prize looks like now, and you have a sense of what you need to do to get there, and you know it's possible.
Yes, yes. You know, of course, at every point in the life of your child or a creation, let's just kind of keep it kind of vague. You know, you at one point you've done everything you can, and you have to send your child to college. Mm-hmm. You know, and quite literally, parents know this. They've experienced this. And it's up to, you know, the quality of the child and the world in which it's released that defines its success. You just kind of have to let go and let God, if that makes sense. And you know, and there's going to come a point with Seventh Son where, you know, very soon, where I have done every single thing that I can to make the book as good as it can be and to evangelize the cause as best as I can. But it will be up to the marketplace to determine the book is worthy of true success. And when I say true success, I mean beyond the initiated, you know, right. Meaning beyond my current fan base. Their support is especially emotionally moving to me. But I would think that they would agree that in order for this book to be, you know, a success, that it will, it has to go beyond them and become, you know, its own thing to a whole new group of people who have never heard of podcasting.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's got to grow beyond the established. Mm-hmm. It's got to resonate with all of the people out there who that their only access and their only exposure to books is the bookstore.
And brick and mortar bookstores at that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just a question, you know, you podcast this or started podcasting Seventh Son in 2005.
Early 2006.
2006. Okay. Mm-hmm. Since then, there has been I would almost call it an explosion of podcast books. Some are good, mm-hmm. some are bad, some are mediocre. Has mm-hmm. that helped Seventh Son? Has it, you know, pulled it down? Has it affected it in any way?
I don't know. I don't know if it's impacted, you know, the perception of Seventh Son or if it's impacted the listenership of Seventh Son. We hope that, as with any kind of emerging trend, that the more creators who hop on and create quality content, the more the meme of podcast novels will spread, which will, you know, improve the chances of more newcomers coming to podcasting, which equates to, well, what else is out there?
Right. Well, I think it probably legitimizes your work even more if it starts getting the reputation for being.
And I think it's right. I absolutely agree, and I think a great deal of it hinges on existing reputation or influencer or a reputation that doesn't yet exist, but like a couple key influencers say something great about the book, and that kind of drives awareness. You know, I'm blessed to say that, you know, Seventh Son, while it certainly wasn't a first mover in the podcast fiction space, you know, that distinction is, you know, absolutely and well deservedly goes to like Scott Sigler, T. Morris, Mark Jeffrey, Jack Mangan. I mean, you know, there was kind of like this, the wave one, you know, 2005 is what I kind of consider wave one. And then wave two, and only because I'm being kind of egocentric, but also because I think that, you know, Seventh Son kind of represented, because of some of the stuff I did to promote it and the stuff that I did within the podcast, both, you know, in the podcast novel and beyond, in my chatter and engagement with my fans, you know, Seventh Son probably represents phase two, you know, like, you know, the year two of podcast noveling.
Yeah.
And I'm blessed to say that, you know, it's a near first mover, but not a first mover. It's an established, it's a known quantity within the community. So when new people come to the community, you know, it already, as you mentioned, it already has this reputation, much like, you know, Scott Sigler's Earth Core and Ancestor and Matthew Wayne Selznick's Brave Men Run and, you know, these kind of like patio book classics. You know, I can't believe it. You know, it's only 2 years and the thing's a freaking classic. Right? These things have an established reputation. And yes, I do agree. It probably, you know, probably motivates newcomers to go to those classics because they've had years to gather a rep and become highly recommended.
No, for sure. And I mean, there are still patio books out there that I have not yet listened to. And part of that is because there's so many, there's so much content mm-hmm. out there. But mm-hmm. I would agree. I've certainly listened to some of the classics early on, and that's a large part of the reason why I decided to start my show. Is I always thought it would be really great if I podcast my own books, but before I'm going to do that, I need to get a little bit of control behind the mic.
Yes, and the very best, and that was something that I thought myself before I released my podcast novels. I studied. I mean, I didn't just listen for pleasure. I studied what the biggest names in podcast fiction were doing with their shows, and I kind of made a mental checklist of what I liked and what I didn't like, and what I thought worked and what I thought didn't work, and kind of used the best ideas shamelessly swiped from them, you know, and kind of, you know, repackaged it in a new way, and hopefully in some instances an innovative way for my own stuff. But you know, but there was a great deal of you know, the learning curve of becoming not just familiar, you know, not only believing in your work and believing it's worthy of distribution, but the technical learning curve and the emotional comfort level in front of the microphone. It's one of the main reasons why I decided to re-record the manuscript of Seventh Son Descent for to celebrate its print release, is because we have very fond memories of many Seventh Son listeners have very fond memories of those early episodes of book one. But if you were to go back and listen to the first episode, you would hear a presentation that is nigh monotone.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
and I love that recording because it is where I was, right? It's like watching 8mm, you know, movies of when you were a child. Mm-hmm. You love it because it captures a time in your life, and it captures a certain, you know, either experience or inexperience. But damn, if I can reboot this son of a gun, let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my God. I mean, it was like I was nodding off in 5 minutes. Like, the president is being murdered by a 4-year-old boy. And all I can do is, as I'm listening, is going like, oh, my God, you sound like you're about to fall asleep.
I know. Yeah, you can certainly pick out the mistakes that you – well, I won't even call them mistakes, but you can certainly pick up the things that you've learned since when you go and listen to the old episodes. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I often will, and I mean, I still do this. You know, we'll often re-listen to the content that I release. The more recent content I will listen to. A part of that is masturbatory, right? Okay. Like emotionally, where it's like, yeah. But really it's to study, to see what you did right. When I was promoting Personal Effects Dark Art, my debut novel, in June, July, and up into August, you know, I realized that in my update podcasts to my fans, I was kind of talking to them about how the book was doing. I noticed that I, you know, in hindsight, did a lot of things wrong. I was like, this is not the way. This is not the way to promote a book, you know, in many ways. God, you know, Jesus, Hutch, you sound like a carnival barker.
Okay.
And a desperate one at that.
Yeah.
You know, and there has to be, you need to bring some class to your shameless shilling for Seventh Son. Now, I may be the only person that noticed that or felt that as I restudied what I'd released, but for me as a performer, but also as someone who wants to be respected, I examined that, and I thought, you know, there's always places to improve. Again, it's like you have to be hyena hungry. What can you do? What can you do to fix things? What can you do to make things better? And that's why I will often re-listen to my stuff.
I listen to my episodes too, and I just listened to the one I put out last week, actually. And I thought, this doesn't sound too bad, but I could pick out the things I didn't like about it. And then I thought back and realized that if I had put out an episode like that on my first one, I would have been ecstatic. You know? So.
Yeah. It's like those weight loss photos before and after.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Where it's like, wow. Yeah. But this is it kind of represents not just the creative life, but life in general. The more you do it, The more either you do your craft or, frankly, the more you live, the better you get at it. We hope.
Well, yeah, we hope. And the more we understand what we're doing, the more we tend to critique ourselves, too, I think.
Yeah. And that's another, I think that's another mission critical thing for particularly folks who are doing, creative work to do is, there's something to be said for the for id. Right. The importance of id.
Yes.
And the importance of, following your bliss. And, it's like, hey, let's convert the barn into a theater. We can do this. And just doing it. I mean, and I do it quite often, on Twitter, right now, tonight, the night of this recording, I'm recruiting people via Twitter to volunteer to have their blogs hacked. "Quote unquote hacked by the computer hacker character in Seventh Son Descent on the day of the book's release. What a neat way to kind of build community and maybe promote the book. But mostly it's just I've been hacked by Kilroy 2.0, and that completely hails from an id kind of a place. But you need that as a creative person because that's where your ideas come from. But what happens far less commonly is introspection.
Yes.
And reasoned decisions. And not only in your creative work, but especially at least for me, how I choose to promote it. Mm-hmm. And that will often come with experience, but it also requires you to stop just for a moment and breathe and think. And in this hyper fast paced social media space where, I don't know what your Twitter follower number is, but I can't even read my default Twitter stream because I'm getting at least 60, updates every minute. Wow. Right. But yeah. whatever it is, 100, whatever it is, it's just. It's like the Matrix. Like there's a blonde, there's a brunette, there's a redhead. It's just gibber. It's just kind of screams by. And there is something, and you are motivated, or many people, including myself, are motivated to wind up to that speed in an attempt to keep up. And when you do that, you lose perspective and you lose introspection. And again, introspection, I think, is key to not only, growing yourself as an artist, but growing yourself as a person, becoming a better person.
Oh, absolutely. I know the minute that you just let yourself get sucked into the speed, you're purely reactive because you don't have time to be proactive about things.
I agree. One of the things that there's living the proactive life and living the reactive life. And it's not that it's oil and water, because of course you must have both within your life, but you have to think ahead, or at the very least, ask yourself, and it will kind of, and we'll pull it back into fiction. You have to ask yourself, even within the thrill of the moment of excavating this story and getting it on the page, you have to ask yourself, is this a smart decision? When I was writing Seventh Son, the novel, there was a sequence in which, like, I had plotted out this like betrayal, this grand betrayal, right, that happens in book two. Mm-hmm. It's a nice plot twist. It's very frightening. But I knew it was on the horizon as I was writing the story, but I was so hungry to jam the betrayal in as quickly as I could that I had another character do it.
Right.
A character who had no reason to, had no character motivation to, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember burning through a day's worth of writing, and at the end of it, looking at it and thinking to myself, this isn't going to work. I have to stick to the plan, because the plan is better than the bullshit I just typed. You have to, the reactive bullshit I just typed. And the reason why I can cite it with such clarity is because it was such an important moment for me as a creator. And it's still, I still carry that experience with me.
The impression I get, and I know it for me as well, I think I get as much out of this as anybody does. I'm not published yet, and I haven't gone through all of that. And while I have done the agent submissions and the publisher submissions and trying to get, you know, your beta readers and all the rest, it has not yet translated into a book deal. Although mm-hmm. I have no doubt that it will mm-hmm. someday.
Congrats. Well, good. And that is an absolutely, you know, that you've got it, you nailed it. You have to have a belief, you know, you have to have that kind of grit and stubbornness, you know, hard headedness to see it through. For me, it was, you know, looking at, and I'm not I've never played the victim card, and I never will about this, but having 60 agents shut the door in your face, can be a demoralizing, and at least for me it was a demoralizing, you know, moment in my life, but it was one of these moments where you just kind of look up and you think to yourself, I'm not crazy. Yeah. I believe in this book enough to try something else. And you know, and thankfully, you know, creators like Scott Sigler and others had already kind of started to carve that path.
Right.
And, you know, and kind of create that trend. And, you know, I don't think I would have come up with that idea on my own. I don't think I certainly wasn't technically savvy enough to come up with it back in 2005. But by gosh, you know, I'm doing everything I can with the distribution method and the promotional methods that I've learned to create. I'm doing everything I can with it within it now, and doing everything I can to innovate when I can.
Yeah, and I know some authors who have had several books out, and even they have their moments where they have doubts about the next one. You know, sure. Just because you have one deal or two deals doesn't mean that you suddenly come to a epiphany that you are all that in a bag of chips and you will never fail.
Right.
Because right. I think if you are of that mind, then you're guaranteed to fail because you've lost sight of the goal. You've lost sight of what it takes to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. You're drinking your own Kool-Aid. Yeah. I mentioned, George Clooney earlier in this chat, and one of the most resonant, I love him. It's like I've got like such a crush on him from a success. Like he's so charismatic and he's so talented. Yes. and he's so this and he's so that. And in addition to these things, he is smart. Mm-hmm. And I read an interview with him back in the early 90s, and this was like the ER days, and this action picture he was starring in called The Peacemaker was being released, and he was just on he was the meme. And every man I knew was getting his hair cut to look like the, that Caesar cut, you know, yep. that he used to have. And I read this interview with him in Premiere magazine in which he said, "You are never as bad as they say you are, but you are never as good as they say you are." And I never, and again, it's like, I mean, I can shit. That was 15 years ago. And I still remember it. Why? Because it's true. And authors or other creators and sadly, the sin extends far into, you know, other parts of our lives, from, you know, business to thinking that you're the best, I don't know, raspberry jam maker in the state, whatever yep, it is. Yep. Right. Right. That, you know, the minute you start, you know, drinking your Kool-Aid is the minute that, as you say, you've kind of lost touch with what motivated you to get here.
Yeah, no, sure.
And that doesn't mean that you don't have to have the self, you know, and that doesn't mean that everything you write will be better than the last. And you may even know that as you write it. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're swinging for the bleachers the best you can, whenever you step up to the bat, you know, up to the plate. In our case, it would be writing a novel, or promoting it, or whatever. As long as you're doing your damned best, then you can sleep well at night.
No, I agree. If you start believing in the pedestal that they put you up on, then there's a good chance you're going to fall and really, really fall a long ways.
Yeah, well, I tell you, you know, as I mentioned earlier that I used to be a newspaper journalist, and I was blessed to, you know, be a features and entertainment writer. And while I did a lot of kind of like, you know, everyman stories, you know, or everyman with a remarkable stories, mm-hmm. I also had a chance to, you know, interview some like very, very prominent, you know, comic book artists and writers and celebrities. I interviewed lots of people. And whenever, and I learned kind of, you know, halfway through my journalism career that if you remind yourself before you talk to these people that they poop just like you do, yep. You know, you're going to be okay. And so whenever I start to kind of walk with a strut, I think to myself, dude, you poop.
I like it a lot.
You know, it's the grand equalizer. You are no more important than any other, you know, any other person on this planet. Stop strumming.
I think we could probably keep going like this all night, but I know it's already midnight your time, and I know that you've probably still got a couple of hours and miles to go before you sleep. So,
I will kind of go into shameless shill mode here.
Absolutely.
I hope I've earned it. And I hope that your listeners will tolerate it. So I did kind of mention the genre that Seven Son, the genre it falls into. I didn't really mention what it was about. And you can easily find a synopsis on the homepage of my website, jchutchins.net. But Seven Son is ultimately about the story takes place in present day. It's about human cloning. It's about high-tech government conspiracies. It's about a villain bent on global destruction and chaos. And you know, and woven in there as deftly as I could are some, you know, thoughts and ruminations about human identity and you know, being what defines us as being unique individuals, especially if human cloning were a reality. The human clones are the good guys in this book, so that's a nice twist. reviewers and book critics. In the mainstream press have really enjoyed the book. So that's something to check out. Again, you can visit my website, jchutchins.net, to learn more. There you will also find a free serialized audiobook of the new manuscript in podcast form, free serialized PDFs, free music written and performed by a character in the book that is also very cool, free update podcasts in which you can win prizes for evangelizing the novel, and the text of the novel is also being serialized at boingboing.net. So there's lots of ways to kind of try before you buy, to kind of test drive Seven Son Descent. And if you enjoy it, please consider purchasing a copy. It's the best way to show your support and to support new media authors like me.
And of course, the day that it's coming out is
Tuesday, October 27th.
Yeah, and not just an Amazon rush. This one is available everywhere, right?
That's exactly right. I'm I keep using the verb blessed, and that is because that's because I absolutely believe it. But yes, Seven Son Descent is with St. Martin's Press, which means that it has distribution into every bookstore in the United States and other retailers. And I'm thrilled. And I mean, you know, I don't want to get weepy on you, but I'm emotionally moved by the fact that the support of the Seventh Son community and the podcasting community helped and frankly made what were instrumental, like that's what made it happen, and I'm very grateful for it.
Yes, and what I would encourage everyone who's listening to do, if you go into a bookstore on October 27th and you don't see it on the shelves, ask for it.
Yes, absolutely. And this is an interesting I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mike.
No, go ahead.
But this is an opportunity to kind of mention this. If you visit the site at the webpage jchutchins.net/order, O-R-D-E-R, you know, you will be presented with the very predictable links to online retailers. But I also wanted to provide customers, you know, or, you know, readers with a printable PDF order form that you can download and print out that has all of the details about Seventh Son right there. And it looks really pretty. It's a really slickly designed order form. And you can print it out and you can present that to the books to the bookstore clerk. This does two things. Of course, it puts in your order and you know, empowers you to ask for the book if you don't see it in the store. But it also it provides a tangible, touchable hook for that book clerk to look at and think, huh, this book might be interesting. This is something I haven't seen before. Maybe I should look into it, and eventually maybe I should recommend it. So it's kind of doing two things. It's almost like an advertisement that for the book that you could present to the book clerk.
No, and that's a great point. I know when Personal Effects came out, I checked the online inventory for my local bookstore, and they had copies according to that. Mm-hmm. So I went right into the store and I looked for it and I looked for it, and I thought, okay, this can't be that hard to find. It's a fairly big book. It just came out. They hadn't put it on the shelves yet. So I asked them for it. And by the time I left, the two clerks one clerk started helping me, and he pulled in another one, and they pulled in one more. Of the three clerks who were helping me, two of them ended up buying it themselves.
I'll be damned. How about that?
So yeah, I mean, if you ask for it.
Are you working on permission, Mike?
No, not at all. No, yeah. I totally believe in what you're doing, JC, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, is because your success will breed other successes. And I'm not just being selfish here, but, well, maybe a little.
Be selfish, though. That's all right. Be selfish. And I am honored I'm honored by the fact that so many people consider me a leader in this space. And I will continue, as I march forward with Seventh Son Descent to, vociferously champion what we are doing in this space and evangelize it because I think it's worthwhile. And if the rising tide can lift all boats, well, by God, let's do it.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for all your time tonight, JC. I appreciate, the really awesome conversation.
Oh, absolutely, Mike. It was my pleasure, and it was an absolute honor to come back. Thank you.
My pleasure.
The Grand Design of Nine.
Those words haunt the mind of Brinkvale psychiatric therapist, Zach Taylor. When his elderly patient, a remorseless killer, utters that phrase, Zach embarks on a quest to glean its cryptic meaning. The answers lie with the patient's psychic granddaughter. But Hen is crazier than the people Zach treats, and the mystical great blade of blood he soon pursues may be more dangerous and deadly than Zach ever imagined. J.C. Hutchins' Personal Effects, Sword of Blood, is a prequel audio novella to his supernatural thriller novel, Personal Effects, Dark Art. Learn more about both stories and become a part of the Personal Effects universe at jchutchins.net.
And that's our show. If you'd like to leave feedback, comments, or questions, you can call the voicemail line at 206-203-2031. Or you can send me an email at feedback@getpublishedpodcast.com. Send me a friend request on Facebook or friend feed at Michael Plested. Or follow me on Twitter at mplested. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, work hard, never give up, and maybe you too can get published. Thanks for listening.
Get Published is an Irreverent Muse production.